Good morning. This is author and podcaster Tansy Rayner Roberts from Tasmania, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Scrolling for January 8th, 2019. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Chip Hassenflow, playing the Grim Reaper.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Like, for instance, when I go upstairs from the basement and I find two executive producers upstairs. Hey, Ron Micah, good morning.
Good morning.
Ron is one of our executive producers, and he's here visiting for New Year's.
New Year's celebration,
happy,
sure.
Happy New Year, Ron.
Thanks, you too.
Welcome in.
Thanks.
Want to hear a story?
Sure.
I went to San Francisco.
That's what I heard, yes.
Uh-huh. I went to San Francisco for a week, had a great time, and got on an airplane, and almost didn't make it back to Chicago.
Yes, I hear about the interviews of others that are in your family, and
my wife and my son wound up being interviewed on the local NBC TV station after our emergency landing at O'Hare Airport this week.
Well, Steve, they loved you in San Francisco, and you come back to Chicago, and this is how they greet you.
There are two kinds of people that wind up on the news when they go on vacation: criminals and my family.
So tell us of this event that happened in midair, Steve.
Uh-huh. We were en route to O'Hare Airport. We were just about to land, about 10 minutes away from landing, and they deployed the landing gear, and the landing gear went pop 3 times.
That's
three loud bangs happened when they deployed the landing gear.
So does that mean that the hydraulics weren't working?
Uh-huh. The first pop was the hydraulic system failed, broke in some way. And the other two, we suspect, were the tires that the hydraulic system then popped as we were preparing to land.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Yes.
Steve, in that type of situation, what do you do? I mean, you're a passenger on a plane.
There was absolutely nothing that any of us could do. We all, as passengers, were just sitting in chairs. There was nothing that we can do. We knew that. We knew that there were only two people that could do anything about this, the pilot and the co-pilot. There were two other United employees in the cabin with us who were flying with us.
Mm-hmm.
They immediately got out of their seats and went to investigate what happened, because that's part of their training as well. So we were pretty confident that they knew what they were doing and that they were going to achieve the goal of landing this plane safely.
So you were right near O'Hare. So this is after a long flight, too.
This was at the end of a long cross-country flight, so we didn't have a lot of fuel left in the tanks, which is good.
My favorite part of your story that you haven't mentioned yet is when you flew over the tower.
So what was decided that needed to be done was we buzzed the tower so that the men in the tower could take out their binoculars and check to see if we had landing gear deployed, because the pilots did not have an indication that the landing gear was successfully deployed. The little light did not come on.
This reminds me of so many action-adventure movies right now. Like,
this is Die Hard 2.
There you go.
Yes. So we didn't panic. That's the good news. We didn't panic. We had nothing that we could do. We prepared. We looked at the emergency card, and we made sure that we knew where the exit was. And I turned to my 12-year-old and said, okay, if we land with no wheels, this vehicle can withstand. That is built to be okay landing with no wheels, scraping across the ground. It'll be fine. But if we have to do that, then the slides will come out. You'll go down the slide, go with the fireman before the plane explodes.
That's sound advice. Yeah, I would say,
thought it was.
I think you had the John Mulaney's thing. So, like, when the plane the plane crashes, Steve.
Uh huh.
You didn't go all street smarts on him.
Well, I was preparing, you know, my son, who didn't necessarily know what was going to happen,
sure,
for the possibilities of what was going to happen in the next 10 minutes. It was quite an emergency situation. It was quite nerve-wracking. You know, we sent out our messages via Facebook, mm-hmm, and made sure that everybody knew how much we loved them.
All right, so this all happened within about 15 minutes.
This was a short amount of time, thankfully.
And Steve obviously had to make a statement to the world just in case.
Uh-huh.
And that was it. What was the first thing that came to your mind?
My final words, as they were written on Facebook, were two words: be amazing. That's what I want the world to do in my absence. Be amazing. I think that works.
That worked real well. Uh-huh. Of course, Steve touched death, but death was not going to take him today.
That's right. That's right. It was a real moment for us. I mean, outside of the plane, this is just a footnote. We're just a statistic that how often do tires blow in midair when you don't hit a deer?
They can't happen very often.
Maybe it was a reindeer. Maybe we hit a reindeer.
It hit the news, Steve.
Yeah, we were on
the news. So that means it doesn't happen very often.
That's right. But we've survived. Everything was just fine, and we made it. We are so happy to be here. Happy New Year, everybody.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You got a chance to see some new movies this week because it was, you know, holiday break.
It was holiday break. It was time to go see the movie. I got to see Adam McKay, and many of us know Adam McKay because of his association with Will Ferrell.
Uh-huh.
And they did Funny or Die, and along with being a writer for many of the Will Ferrell's comedies.
Uh-huh.
And we got to go see Vice, Steve. It seems like that was the lucky one and to avoid Will Ferrell's film.
Right. This is not a Will Ferrell film. This is not a comedy. This is the story of Dick Cheney becoming the vice president under George W. Bush.
There's a lot of comedy to it.
Okay.
Okay. So and that's what it is. A lot of winking, a lot of nudge-nudge going on. Adam McKay became obsessed with learning a little bit about our former vice president, Dick Cheney. And I think he read 18 books is what he read.
Wow.
And eventually started putting together his story. My favorite part of this was the beginning of it. There's a writing of it. He goes, this is what we think happened as far as we can tell. I mean, that's where you get the wink that this is going to be a story. Hmm. Basically, it's the rise of a person.
Uh-huh.
From everyday status to becoming vice president, potentially the most powerful vice president we've ever had.
Right.
And Dick Cheney, like many young people, well, I shouldn't say like many young people, he did attend Yale.
Okay.
And he did not finish at Yale. But he was enjoying himself at the time, much like how later on George W. Bush was enjoying Yale, probably a little party going on. And we get the rise where he started working for Rumsfeld, who was played by Steve Carell.
Uh-huh.
Many of us know Senator Rumsfeld because we are here in Illinois. Mm. And Cheney learned a lot. He drank in a lot of Rumsfeld, who was probably a pretty tough guy to work for.
Drinking in Rumsfeld is something he did at Yale, right?
Amy Adams, yeah, that's right. Amy Adams did play, enchanted as she is.
Uh-huh.
She did play Christian Bale, the Batman's wife.
Okay.
And basically, she did ultimatums like, you're not going to fail me. You're going to go do this. You're going to go work, and you're going to make the world happen.
Because Christian Bale is the one who's playing Dick Cheney in this.
He is, okay. And he gained a few pounds for this.
Yes, he gained like 40 pounds to play this role.
That's right.
I'm waiting for my role because I've gained 40 pounds as well.
So this is a wonderful cast. It sheds a light on basically how a person can rise from being a citizen and the impact he has on the world. I did not realize at the time, and with a little research I probably could have, the insider he was in Washington before he became the CEO of Halliburton.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, basically how he left Halliburton to become the vice president, and his negotiations with, if you watch the trailer, you can see the negotiations with Bush. W is kind of played as kind of a buffoon.
Sam Rockwell as George W. Bush. I love Sam Rockwell. I will watch any Sam Rockwell movie.
This wasn't necessarily endearing to Bush or to Cheney.
Okay.
I don't think Adam McKay is necessarily a person who is sympathetic to this group, but I don't think this was unfair to them.
So it wasn't a hey, I'm going to make this group of people look good. You felt it was a real, honest movie as well as can be done.
Yeah, and in fact, it gets addressed in the final scene of the film. Mm. Is there's a focus group talking about it, and he goes, "Oh, you're just a bunch of left wingers trying to make fun of Bush and Cheney." And then there's a fight breaks out. So my point is knowing that going in, I don't think it would change your view of watching this film. Mm. I found that the first two seasons of House of Cards with Kevin Spacey playing the president gave a real insight on the use of power. I think this story of Cheney is a story of power. I think it's worthy of your time, and this is definitely a very good film. Mm. I would say of the films, 75 out of 100.
That's pretty good for Chip's scale.
Mm-hmm.
I look forward to seeing that one. What do you think, Ron?
I'm going to have to say it's going to be one of those I have to see at home, and I may have to put on the captions to follow along with all the dialogue. That's just me.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got a chance to see Mary Poppins Returns a second time.
All right. So we were certainly not particular. Or I certainly was not very kind to Mary Poppins when I had watched it the first time. I felt it wasn't worthy of repeat viewing, and it fell short. My daughter wanted to see Mary Poppins Returns. So Dad took his daughters to go see it.
Nice.
In addition to that, as I was driving from the Chicago area to the East Coast, I got to listen to the soundtrack multiple times. So I probably listened to the soundtrack 6 or 7 times.
And you were not very positive about the soundtrack the first time either.
Absolutely not. In fact, my daughter, her review of it as we were leaving, as we were discussing it, certainly was my impression of first seeing it. I'm much more sympathetic to it now. I think this is 75, 80 out of 100.
Wow.
I'm revising my review of this. I think that this was a very skilled musical when it was put together. Mm. I think they did a great job talking about the themes of this, which are basically adults can live in a fog at times and not see what's before them. Children being a group that's using their imagination, being able to see things maybe from a fresh set of eyes, helps us view what was going on. Obviously, the story basically is around the father whose wife has passed away, is sort of struggling to find his way into the world, and addressing all the challenges of being a single parent during this. In fact, the sister came back to kind of help out. During this time, as he's living in this fog, the children are kind of left on their own. But, they're becoming independent. They're seeing how they can fit in to help father address the situation. But you know what? They have their own limitations. And Mary Poppins is there to help them break through that. And they use their imagination. They were able to see the banker for what he was. A person who, on the book cover, as we addressed in the song, who looks like a very positive person working for their interest, ultimately was not. And then, of course, we have Dick Van Dyke show up at the end.
Of course.
Spoiler.
No. Have you seen this one yet, Ron?
We did. We actually, as a Christmas gift to my mother-in-law, we took her and my wife and my two kids, and we went and saw it. I thought it was a good time. Mm-hmm. I liked the tie, how they tied in with the previous movie. It wasn't just a complete break and then a new story starting somewhere else with just Mary Poppins there. So it was good. I liked it.
I liked it very much. I'm glad that you got a chance to review it again and liked it better the second time.
I'd be curious on hearing the songs again, like you said, Chip, how that goes through and how that enhances the movie when we see it again.
I think what you'll notice is that they certainly are skilled songs. I would say 5 or 6 of the songs of this would resonate incredibly well. They talk to each other. I still believe Angela Lansbury's song that she sings ultimately was designed for Julie Andrews.
Yeah.
Lin-Manuel Miranda did an incredible job. And I'll say the same thing. Emily Blunt certainly is a Mary Poppins.
Oh, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yes. I think she did a great job with that. You also got a chance to see Aquaman, the big movie of the Christmas season.
Oh, well, Aquaman was the big superhero film that was that came out. This is owned by the competitor to the Marvel films. The Marvel films have obviously taken the world by storm.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Black Panther is a C-level character. Guess what? Aquaman is too. This is
sea level.
Oh, certainly.
Did you just make an ocean joke?
I did make an ocean joke. How do you like that?
Sea level character. Nice. Got it.
Dun-dun-dun. This stars Nicole Kidman, interestingly enough, and also William Dafoe. This, they've got an incredible cast for this. Zack Snyder, who was in charge of many of the DC films and the tone of DC films, so Man of Steel, Wonder Woman, and things of that nature, has been told he's not going to be helping out going forward, Batman versus Superman. And Geoff Johns, who is a writer and now in charge of all the DC characters on the comic book side, has a lot to do with sort of the tone of these films. This is a film that maybe an 8-year-old would enjoy. I did not find this particularly a strong film. I think that all the challenges of the DC universe are still there. I think the director did a good job. It kind of has a fantasy type of feel to it, but certainly it's just not a very strong character. The story is okay, maybe 45-50 out of 100. Like I said, this is not great, but I don't think it's necessary. I think it's the best you could do with this type of character. That being said, I saw Black Panther, and they took another C-level character, and they created a whole world for him, and that was really good. And I do think that the Captain Marvel film that will be coming out looks equally as
high expectations, that's for sure. Yeah.
And I feel like they really are struggling to find the story to tell with these characters.
Ron, you were a big comic book fan and loved all these characters so much in the past, but you've kind of gone away from that a little bit, right?
In some respects, yeah.
So did you see Aquaman?
I did not get a chance to see Aquaman.
Do you plan to see Aquaman?
I do not plan to see Aquaman in the theater. I have not seen actually any DC movies in the theater.
That goes to the heart of the fan community right there, because we've had a lot of discussions about those sorts of characters in the last 20 years. Right. And for Ron to say that he's not interested in that DC universe, that says something.
Well, Aquaman has always traditionally, I mean, except for the early 60s where it had a cartoon out, has not been particularly the strongest of the characters. And then throw on, maybe the generation that's younger than us, their introduction to the character through Robot Chicken. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was always the punching bag. So they worked real hard to make him a very masculine person, a very tough guy. He's a big drinking guy with his father.
Yeah.
And but the challenge with this, and I'm very happy they didn't tell like an origin story of him. It's thrown in there through flashbacks and stuff. You have some stormtroopers there. That means they don't have faces and you can beat them up.
Sure.
And whatever. You have a whole bunch of, you're whisked away. It's all the problems of the Phantom Menace, where you just whisk away through a bunch of stuff. And Ocean Master and Black Manis, I mean, they really are comic book villains. Mm. Mm-hmm. Yes, they get through the heart of what's going on, but this is certainly not a great film.
You got to see a documentary called Scatter My Ashes at Berghoff's. Tell us all about that one.
This is from 2013. This is a story about the New York department store Berghoff's. So in New York, we have Macy's and Bloomingdale's and Barney's and Berghoff's. And Berghoff's, as we learn, a designer doesn't feel like they've made it until they have one of their lines showcased at Berghoff's. We learn, we get a lot of interviews on designers. We get a lot of interviews from people who shop there. We get interviews from the founding of it and why the building was there. And we also get a number of interviews with personal shoppers who are definitely very wry and stuff like that. I can tell you that the Berghoff's has a profound, the thing that we probably have closest to that in the Chicago area would probably be Neiman Marcus. Okay. But you're really getting an idea of what glamour is, what style is, how ultimately this store eventually works its way down the styles and the colors they pick and stuff like that to Target and Walmart and stuff like that the general population goes to. This is certainly where the companies at the mall are making decisions on how to make things less expensive, how to manufacture them in different ways. I recommend this. This is from 2013. Mm-hmm. Finally, Joan Rivers is interviewed out through this whole thing, and she's very funny.
She was wonderful, wasn't she? Mm. One of those great comedians. I was on an airplane, so I got to watch a movie that I didn't get to watch in the movie theater. I saw Deadpool 2 on the airplane.
All right, so just put this in perspective, Steve. Uh-huh. This came out in February of 2018, so almost a year ago.
Right.
All right, so now we're going to review it from Steve's point of view.
From my point of view, before the emergency landing, this was a great movie. This was fun. This was entertaining. Ryan Reynolds is Deadpool, and Deadpool would not exist as a movie without that actor in that role. This is what I hope all R-rated comedies are able to be, because it's funny. Have you seen this movie, Ryan?
I have not seen that.
Did you watch the first one?
I did not see the first one either.
This is an R-rated comedy on the highest level.
Superhero comedy.
It does have superheroes.
So, a young person's property put through an R-rated, movie.
Yeah.
With lots of childish fun humor.
Uh-huh.
And certainly with adult situations.
And a lot of inappropriate humor that I loved. I was howling in the airplane watching this, especially the ending during the credits. There's, of course, three or four different things that are happening during the credits, and they are hilarious.
So, in fact, we can go ahead and spoil this.
Can we spoil something from a year
ago?
Steve,
this has been a year. Okay. The spoilers of this, in fact, we may have spoiled it when it first came out.
Maybe.
Deadpool, or Ryan Reynolds, can go back in time.
Right.
So the first thing he does is he erases a number of poor decisions that Ryan Reynolds made in the past. One would be the playing Deadpool.
The
for Bryan Singer's X-Men.
Right. The faceless Deadpool with no mouth, taking away the one thing about Ryan Reynolds that's his best attribute, which is his mouth, closing that off so that he can't talk. He kills that character.
And wow. Steve, before he signed the contract to sign play Green Lantern.
Yes. Deadpool goes and kills Ryan Reynolds a second time right before he signs the contract to play Green Lantern.
And did you catch the part where he refers to, all right, so the actor who plays Thanos and the actor who plays Cable are the same actor.
Yes.
And so he refers to him as Thanos.
All right.
This is a fun movie. It does suffer from sequelitis. It is a sequel. It does try to do all those wonderful things that the first film did, and it maybe is trying too hard because the first film was so good. But this is a really good movie. Go out and rent a copy of Deadpool 2. Put the kids to bed. And then watch this R-rated, very funny, adult-oriented comedy that just happens to have superheroes in it. I also saw a couple of Riff Trax movies this week because, you know, Riff Trax.
They sent you a present, Steve.
Yes, they did. For Christmas, they sent all of their loyal customers a $10 gift card to spend as we wished on whatever crummy movie we could find on the Riff Trax catalog. I got two movies, both directed by David DiCaccio. The first one is A Talking Cat.
With a question mark at the end.
No, with an intro bang at the end. An exclamation point and a question mark and another exclamation point. A talking cat? And yes, the boys are very, very unkind to that title. The other movie, which was filmed at the same time in the same house, is called Santa's Summer House. And no, it doesn't have an intro bang at the end. But this is ridiculous. Terrible films, which I just love watching with the Riff Trax boys giving their commentary and telling us all of the things that we should be looking for and poking needles at this director and his ability to make these films. These films look like my 17-year-old made them, and I would be very upset if he had made these movies.
Now, this is a director who is known for really bad films, right?
He pumps out so many films. He has made over 140 films in the last 30 years. He learned under Roger Corman, if that tells you anything. Roger Corman was another schlock movie director.
In fact, the whole time I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking of Ed Wood.
Yes.
You know, Johnny Depp rubbing his hands. rubbing his shoulders.
Yes.
And, you know, Plan 9 from Outer Space type of.
This is a Plan 9 from Outer Space type of student film that somehow made it onto my video screen, and I'm so glad that I got to watch these two movies.
Steve, are these released wide?
Yeah. Most of these are on Amazon Prime right now. If you go to Amazon Prime and you type in some of these titles, I typed some of the titles into the show notes here. Another movie that also came out in 2013 is called A Talking Pony?
Yeah, these sound awful, and thank goodness you have your Riff Trax to make them more enjoyable.
That's right. The Talking Cat movie, the cat's voice is played by Eric Roberts. Eric Roberts, brother to Julia Roberts, recorded his voice for the sound of the cat talking. It sounded like they recorded it on his cell phone while he was in a cab on the way to somewhere else.
Well, that sounds quality, Steve.
It is terrible. So I don't recommend watching this on Amazon Prime without the Riff Tracks, but I do recommend you go to rifftracks.com and get these movies.
All right, Steve, lighten us up a little bit. Tell us something that was fun that came out that you got to watch.
The second season of The Orville started this week, and I got a chance to see that. The Orville is, remember, Seth MacFarlane's Star Trek show that doesn't...
Star Trek, but it's not Star Trek, Steve.
Don't say Star Trek. No. It is the best Star Trek on TV. This is a comedy based on the idea of the future, where we could be as humans, traveling the stars, going out, seeking new life and new civilizations. Oh, sorry. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? I love this show. I love watching good Star Trek. This is really good. It is just like Star Trek The Next Generation.
Okay.
It's got all of the joy and all the adventure without any of the darkness that we see in Star Trek Discovery.
Does it have a... Earl Grey tea, Steve?
I'm sure there's Earl Grey tea, but there's a lot of alcohol that is consumed on the Orville.
Is there really?
Yeah, every episode there's at least one person that is talking about drinking.
All right, speaking of Star Trek, by the way, the new trailer for the Discovery was just dropped down.
Yep.
So CBS and Paramount still maybe struggling to find a voice?
Still hanging their hat on the well that is Star Trek. This is going to be a Christopher Pike
captain. He's going to be coming back, Steve.
And, of course, Spock is a part of it.
All right.
So you got that going.
So January 17th is when that opened.
Yep.
We'll see how it compares to The Orville. Steve, your one and only chance to watch Doctor Who, a new episode. What happened on the 1st of January? Tell us more about that.
Happy New Year, everyone. Here is a Doctor Who episode called Resolution. It is the only episode of Doctor Who for the year 2019. The next episode will come sometime in 2020. This was a good episode. I enjoyed this. This was all about the Doctor battling his / her biggest foe, the Daleks. And this Dalek in this episode is really, truly scary. Like, this is some new stuff that the Daleks have never been able to do before, and the Doctor really holds her own against the Daleks. I was very happy to watch this episode, to watch Jodie Whittaker finally battling our favorite foe, the Daleks. I have to say...
The Plunger. The Plunger came after her.
Well, the Plunger was a little bit different in this one. It kind of was split into five pieces, so it was used as like a grabber. It could grab things. Mm-hmm.
It's the next version of the Daleks. You got to get to there.
Uh-huh. This was a really good episode of Doctor Who. I have to say, I did not enjoy the majority of season 11 of Doctor Who. I just didn't. The story...
Heresy, I say, Steve. Heresy!
The stories just weren't on the grand level that I've come to love in the last 13 years since the reboot, and they just fell flat to me in so many ways.
It sounds a lot like, as we were talking about this, that it suffered from the 1970s. There were no bad guys.
Yeah.
Everyone was just misunderstood,
Steve.
There
were no big, bad, evil in Doctor Who this year.
Those meddling kids, Steve.
Yeah, the bad guy was always us. We are the bad guy. And it was every episode. And it was like, yeah, I get it. We should recycle. Okay, I get it, Doctor Who. It was more of a children's show than it has been for the last 13 years. It was very basic. It was very simple. It had very interesting historic moments in it. The Rosa Parks episode was a great historical look into that moment. But it was not a big bad.
Well, maybe they're... determining what Disney determined with Marvel is that these are children's properties, and they need to be treated as children's properties.
Maybe.
And what I mean by that is trying to appeal to a 50-year-old man, your interests just maybe have evolved to something beyond that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that we can't enjoy children's properties. I'm just saying that maybe we just have evolved.
Mm.
That may be it. It may be a new direction that they're going.
Did Captain Planet make an appearance at all during those, that season?
So Captain Planet.
No? Okay.
It was so Captain Planet all season. You were exactly right.
Ted Turner's going to show up as the new Stan Lee. He's just going to show up in everything.
Well, there was a Trump character in one episode.
Was there really?
Yes. And he was just a jerk. And everyone said, oh, he's just a jerk. And he said, don't compare me to Donald Trump. And everyone went, okay. Okay. We won't.
Good Lord. All right.
I didn't like it. I didn't like it. Sorry. Opening this week, maybe there's some movies that I'll like, but let's take this with a grain of salt because it is the first week in January, and these are films.
This is where all the great films are coming
oh
out.
Oh boy, Steve. Yes, here we go.
No. This is where all the films go to die. The first movie is called A Dog's Way Home. You've probably seen a commercial for this one. It's about a dog who finds its way home.
I immediately thought of Kentucky super basketball fan Ashley Judd is starring in this.
Yes, she is.
So it's got that going for it, Steve.
And the voice of the dog, Bryce Dallas Howard. Well, that seems like a waste of her acting ability right there.
Well, Steve, sometimes a dog gets lost and must find its way home.
Uh-huh.
And battle the wolves. January. Battle the wolves, uh-huh. Steve. All right, so that's out there. That certainly is a family film.
Yes.
Anything else coming out? Maybe a science fiction one.
All right. The science fiction action film of the week is Replicas. This is about a scientist who becomes obsessed with bringing back his family members when they die in a horrific traffic accident. The scientist, of course, is the best scientist on the planet, Keanu Reeves.
Whoa.
They died in a traffic accident. Whoa.
So this is Neo. Starring in this.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's really interesting how Keanu Reeves has really branded himself as a science fiction actor.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, what can we say? This is January, Steve. Let's keep going.
Have you seen a commercial for this one, Ron?
I saw the commercial for that. I'm glad to see that he is not stuck as Neo. I mean, he's doing so many different other films.
Sure.
But we can still refer to him.
We can still refer to him as Neo.
Oh, yeah.
Or Ted, or Bill, or whichever one he was.
Yeah.
We always say that for President's Day. What do we know about George Washington? Born on President's Day.
That's right. The next one is called The Upside. This is the remake of the French film The Intouchables, which was released in 2011. It's a story of...
Of course it is, Steve.
Well, I know that because it's been in my house since 2011. My French teacher wife bought this movie 8 years ago, and we've watched it several times. It's a really good movie. It's the story of a quadriplegic who asks his service to have a man come in to help him with his daily needs. And the man who comes in is a down-on-his-luck, unemployed man who has his own problems. And they work together and really figure out the human condition in a beautiful way.
This looks like a great cast, by the way. We have Kevin Hart, Bryan Cranston, Nicole Kidman.
And Julianna Margulies.
Well, let's just say.
Yeah, right. There you go.
So anyway, this looks like a fun film. Actually, I'm surprised it's released now, but you know, there's not that much.
The surprise is that it was made in 2016.
This has been sitting
on a shelf for 3 years.
Well, you know, that's quality.
That's a mark of quality right there. What do you think about this one, Ron? Do you have any interest in this one?
I'm curious now that you've described it that way. Who is the person that's coming in, being the caretaker?
The caretaker is Kevin Hart, and the guy in the wheelchair is Bryan Cranston.
Oh, boy, that should be interesting.
I think it's a good pairing, yeah, right?
This is a great cast.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I hope it lives up to what it was supposed to, and they just didn't find a place to put it.
I hope so.
All right, so anything else, Steve?
Brooklyn Nine-Nine is coming back to TV on Thursday, but it's not on Fox like it has been for the last 5 years. Fox dropped it, and there was a huge outcry from the public, and the public said, this is good TV, don't kill this TV.
The power of the force brought it back, didn't it, Steve?
Right. The biggest fan of Brooklyn Nine-Nine is one Mark Hamill, and he wrote on Twitter, don't cancel this show. It's the only good show on TV. NBC heard the outcry and picked up Brooklyn Nine-Nine for a sixth season starting on Thursday.
Alec Guinness had no comment.
From a certain point of view.
Oh, man.
There is a foreign film coming out this week. It's one of those reading movies.
It's a reading movie, Steve.
Yeah, this is called Perfect Strangers. It's not about Belky Bartokomous, though. This is the story of
That's ridiculous.
I was so hoped. I saw it on the list here of the show notes, and I'm like, oh, wow, Perfect Strangers is coming back. Excellent.
Netflix must be bringing them, right?
It must be.
This is not that. This is the story of seven friends who gather together for dinner and decide to play a game in which all incoming messages and calls will be displayed on their cell phones for the entire group. And boy, does that lead to a series of dark secrets that slowly creep into this storyline.
All right, so this reads like it would be a wonderful, powerful play.
Uh-huh. Single stage, one table, just these things that are happening remotely through these phones. This is, sounds like a great story.
So if I was going to go to the movies this week, this is the movie I would try to see. And if I was going to make an English-speaking film, this seems like a wonderful premise to rewrite.
I think this would be a great reboot movie, just like I have high hopes for that Intouchables reboot.
Now, Steve, it's a Spanish-speaking film from Spain, so remember the TH.
It's in actual Spanish, as opposed to all the other Spanishes that you identified over the years. Book it. Brings us to our book of the week. You got a chance to read a very powerful, very important book called Make Time, How to Focus on What Matters Every Day. This is by Jake Knapp and John Zartoski.
Yeah, that's right. These are two Google engineers. Mm-hmm. One of them worked on YouTube, and one of them worked on Gmail.
Okay.
And basically, they were having the problem that many of us have, in that we are very distracted. Interestingly enough, technology is something called infinity loops.
Uh-huh.
Infinity loop is where you go in to do something, and it takes you to another place, and takes you to another place.
Just like YouTube.
Exactly. YouTube is a great example of that.
And it's designed that way.
Uh-huh.
And while this technology is wonderful, and that's one of the things that they always say, is that we like technology. We love technology. But technology is zapping your life away. It's taking your life away. I remember our conversation that we had with Professor Chestnut down at Fayetteville State University, mm-hmm. where he had been playing the video game on the World of Warcraft, and he realized that over time, and he did it to have time with his wife, and their babies were born.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, he woke up and he said, "I've spent a year, like the hours of 365 days, playing this game." He goes, "I've got to find a new way of addressing life."
Mm-hmm.
So many of us find ourselves very short for time. We always feel like we're busy, 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 and yet we don't really feel like we're accomplishing what we would like to accomplish in life or what we say we value. These are two engineers, once again, Google engineers, who basically sat down and they're using the skills that they learned working for Google to move us and have you refocus your life on what values.
Because when they
on what do you value.
Because when they put together a project at Google, they use something called the design sprint. This is their way of getting to the goal of what they're trying to achieve with Google. They wrote a book about that 2 years ago, and now this is their book about how we can use time better, how we can focus and see what matters in our day and really try to achieve those goals.
So we live here in Chicago. We're familiar with Motorola is the company that's around the corner from us. They used a Six Sigma program, basically as a continuous improvement, how to look at engineering problems and improve them. Now, Google's version of that is the design sprint. And basically, it's a way of looking at problems, how to identify them, how to improve them, and continuously make things better. And it's using their technology strategies for this. And they're using that to help you manage your time better. And part of one of the immediate things they tell you is delete some of these apps off of your phone.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not saying technology is bad. They're not saying that you can't go to Facebook and check it out. But they've determined, Apple has determined, that 80 times a day you're opening your phone because you want to check email. You want to clean out your Gmail box. You're checking Facebook status. This completion, this idea of going through and trying to complete, to zero things out, it's zapping your time away. So what are some skills that we can learn to give it back to you? One is scheduling your time better. Mm-hmm. They use a block program. So you're going to go through your calendar and you're just going to, and maybe you use Post-it notes. Maybe you use a piece of paper. Maybe you use your Gmail calendar. But you're going to go through and you're going to block out times that are going to be for you. Another part of it is one of the gentlemen said he was going to become a morning person. He goes, I wasn't a morning person. But what I determined through looking at my productivity and my team's productivity is that if I move to a morning person, that's when I'm most productive. So the things that he did in the morning is that when he woke up, all the lights in his apartment come on. And he goes, I'm not really ready to do something. So he talks about the ritual of making coffee, grinding the beans, boiling the water, pouring the water over the beans. This idea certainly is kind of mindless. He goes, but that 15 minutes that it takes me to kind of get all that stuff going, that allows him to get up and ready to go. And he likes to write in the morning. He likes to exercise in the morning. So he schedules his whole day for his personal stuff, maybe in the morning, before he gets involved in his business stuff.
So, Ron, as an engineer, do you subscribe to this whole idea of putting together a goal, having a plan, and having steps to focus on that goal?
I can't help it, but I do. It's the way that my brain works most days. I mean, that's just the way. Getting up early is what I do. Mm-hmm. I have set in my mind what I need to do. It's even gotten to the point where I can look at the clock and say, oh, wow, I really can't do that right now because I know I need to get to the next thing I got to get going on. So I subscribe to the continuous improvement thing that you'd mentioned. That's been our initiative at where I work. We use the Toyota method of mm-hmm. continuous improvement, considering, especially with the team, who works well when during the day.
Sure.
And that helps you work better as a team.
Well, I'm going to mention is that for one of the gentlemen, he was able to become a morning person. The other gentleman could not. And so what he determined is that he has to, in the afternoon, he's not going to work on, he's basically going to leave work a little earlier. He's going to spend time with his family and some things like that, but he's going to come back to it later on. So he needs downtime, and that downtime allows him to perform higher later. And this is also about shutting your brain off from things when you need to, because if you schedule your time, you will find you have enough time to get some of these things done, especially the priority of the day. In addition to that, maybe you leave at 3 o'clock or 4:30 or 5 o'clock.
Wow. And having those things done. Do you have that kind of flexibility in your job, Ron?
Not in the least, but
me neither.
I kind of got the feeling that's maybe why Google isn't in the Midwest. There's no way a Midwestern will ever get to the point of, oh, I'm going to leave at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon and work later on in the day.
Do you think it's a weather-based reasoning, or what?
We're all just on the clock sort of people. I mean, when you're at work, you're at work. Or
that's also very German.
It could be
because Germans are when work is work and play is play. But when time is over, it's over. Yeah. So they work pretty diligently, and part of it is how they. In fact, I was reading some stuff about this. How they had to use resources because the resources weren't there. They had to manage those resources a different way, and they scheduled their time based on that. Well, obviously Google and Silicon Valley, which we're getting ready to talk a little bit about, is a much more creative space. And while certainly, and I should mention, one of these authors is from Milwaukee. So, I mean, he lived in Chicago and worked in Chicago for a long time. It takes being part of the creative group that's changing the world, who has a mission to really this betterment of things, sort of plays its way through their approach to problems, too.
One of the things about this is our school system is certainly not built on a flexible schedule. We put our kids are forced into a regimented industrial era schedule.
Kind of like inputs and outputs. As we learn as adults, especially in working, there are times where you're on and times that you're off. But for our teachers and for our students, every hour or every period that you have, you have to be on. And not only are you supposed to be on, you're supposed to be like perfect on.
Yep.
So In fact, I've thought about this quite a bit. You know, if mornings are the time to teach English and math and science and things of that nature, maybe afternoons are the time to teach the arts, to teach band, to teach football.
Maybe the exercise period should be first. Maybe that should be the first thing that we do to get going. Maybe it should be in the middle as a break. Maybe it should be at the end.
Steve, you've got so many middle schoolers. I mean, you recognize the funk is real.
It's real.
It's true. That is true.
You put all those kids through PE early in the morning, Steve, and you get to live with that for the rest of the day.
Ron, what do you think about the idea of a flexible work day? Would you think that that would work for you, even though you're in the Midwest, even though you think that you couldn't?
That's tough because I'm so used to the thought of I've got to be there at a certain time. I got to be gone at a certain time. Part of the appreciation of others from the East Coast that mm-hmm. are at my workplace. There are some folks from the West Coast that I've worked with before. They can come back and say, I've thought about this overnight. I worked through this during mm-hmm. this time. And you kind of think of the point of, well, you're just a workaholic sort of person, but they are actually spending the time thinking of that. So it's maybe when they are better. They are better awake and when they're more energized. I could see that. Mm-hmm. So
a lot of this comes from becoming more aware of how your body naturally works.
Uh-huh. Natural rhythms.
So this talks a lot about scheduling, about blocking out your time so you have your time. And then you also have their time. That also, if somebody needs to invade your time, because maybe you have a shared schedule, then you can say, no, I can't do that, or yes, I can. I mean, it allows you to have this. I immediately thought of how my office is being run, how I want to run my schedule, and things that I want to do to let my clients know that I can meet with them a certain time. And part of that is making that available to them, blocking out my time and then my business time along with that. I found this fascinating. I highly recommend it. This is the beginning of the year.
Uh-huh.
This is a great time to readdress how you do things and potentially make a change for the better. Last year, we talked a lot about spending your time with other humans because humans perform and crave being around humans. Even if you're a wallflower, that ability to be around another person is very important. This year, I'm going to talk a little bit about, and I think the message is going to be how to space out your time to get more out of the things that you value. Nobody sits down in life and says, you know, my time would be best spent, you know, looking at my phone for, you know, way more time than I feel is comfortable.
Right.
So anyway.
Excellent.
Highly recommended.
I look forward to all of the rest of the books that you bring to us about time management for 2019. This one is called Make Time, How to Focus on What Matters Every Day by Jake Knapp and John Zarotsky. You can find it on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com.
Scroll with it.
I told you that we just got back from San Francisco. Let me tell you, it was a fantastic trip, even though it ended with an emergency landing when we got back to Chicago.
So exciting event and exciting ending,
it was
Steve.
So exciting.
With a cliffhanger.
Oh boy. Yeah. Let's call it a cliffhanger. I had so much fun. We decided to go to San Francisco for our holiday this year because I've never been to California. This was my first time ever setting foot in California, and San Francisco specifically, I wanted to go and be a part of that whole culture, that Silicon Valley, that ideal that I've been building up in my head for the last 30 years of computers and technology in that area.
All right, so technology teacher, yes. Technology person, uh-huh. Person who enjoys technology. How would you go to Silicon Valley? How did you schedule this out?
The first thing I did was I got a house. We rented a whole house through Airbnb instead of going into a hotel. We are no longer staying in a hotel because I'm an old man and I wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning no matter what. No matter what, I wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning. So when we go to Pacific time, which is two time zones over, I wake up at 4 o'clock every morning.
So your kids and wife are up with you.
About 4 hours later, they wake up and they're ready to start their day.
So Steve's got time to get coffee.
So I have time to get coffee. I have time to read a book. I have time to watch a movie or two before they wake up every morning. So we rented an entire house so that I could go to a different part of the house to do my activities.
So did you rent a car, Steve?
No. Renting a car is not a thing that I'm going to do in San Francisco. The hills in San Francisco are a beautiful thing to look at, not a beautiful thing to drive on. So we did all of our travel on Lyft while we were in the city of San Francisco.
That sounds fascinating. And tell me about food. Did you make your own food, Steve?
We did a little bit. We did one grocery run when we first got into town and then had food in the house for breakfast, generally. But all of our other meals, if we weren't eating in a restaurant, we had somebody deliver our food. We used Grubhub and Uber Eats and had people just bring the food to us.
That's four apps, Steve. Four apps.
Our app of the week. No, just kidding. This was the high-tech way to vacation, and I really highly recommend all of these services because they take away all of that apprehension about driving in a strange place, finding food in a strange place, and finding a place to stay. Everything was taken care of through these three apps.
All right, so Steve, you're there. Where did you go visit?
Well, my main objective in going to Silicon Valley specifically was going to the Computer History Museum. This is a collection of all of the computing that we have done for the last 2,000 years, starting with the Abacus, moving up to Babbage's mechanical gear-based computing machine, moving to punch cards, and then to magnetic media, and all of the things that drive all of the other things that we do are computer-based now. And here's the history of all of that, all laid out in a beautiful presentation in the museum.
Well, someone like Steve would find that very fascinating, but the rest of the population, would they enjoy that too?
Ron, would you go to the computer museum with me?
I would definitely go to computer museums with you. I'm right there.
But, I mean, not everybody enjoys technology on that level. Obviously, you are in the mecca of technology capital.
That's right.
But the reality is would the average person enjoy going to this type of museum?
I think that Ron and I would really have a long, fun ride through this museum. My kids looked at it as dusty old stuff. They didn't really recognize the power that we were talking about here. The idea of the supercomputer in your pocket certainly came from innovation over innovation over innovation that started with a very simple concept of doing math mechanically. And understanding that is something that I've been studying for 30 years, Ron, too. And the kids didn't love it nearly as much as I did.
This next place, I had to actually go on the web and use a search engine to find it. Steve, the campus you visited...
That was the joke. That was the joke that I used when we were driving by. We went to the Google campus.
Oh.
The Googleplex is what they call it. It's a 60-acre complex of all of the buildings that run Google. And when we were driving by, I took a picture and posted it on the web, and I said, where's the Google headquarters? And then I answered my own question with, I don't know, look around. Yes, you have to Google it to find out where the Google headquarters is. This is a beautiful, sprawling campus. Unfortunately, we were there during Christmas break, so nobody else was.
Well, fortunately, because you had all those bikes available to you, Steve.
Hundreds of bicycles just waiting to be ridden all throughout the 60-acre campus. This is a beautiful facility that we loved walking through, and we could imagine what it would be like with all the thousands of employees walking back and forth, enjoying all the wonderful weather in San Francisco and enjoying each other's company and discussing the future of all the things we do, because boy, Google is a big center of my life.
Did you see the Android character anywhere around there?
The Android Park, where all of the Androids for each flavor of Android for the last 10 years,
yeah.
They are all there. We took pictures with each and every one of them individually, of course. And we went to the Google Store, which generally you don't give Google money very often because you don't have to.
Well, you're the product,
Steve. You are the product. They are taking their money from your information. You're welcome. But yeah, we went to the Google Store, and we spent more money at the Google Store than at any other stop in the entire week, because it was so great to see the center of our existence. Google is so much the center of everything that I do, and to be there was phenomenal.
All right, so Johnny Ives obviously met you at your next stop to give you a personal tour, correct?
Unfortunately, we went during Christmas break, and Johnny Ive was busy, and so we went to the Apple headquarters, the big
spaceship
landed in the middle of Silicon Valley, and took a look at that. It is a beautiful, artistic piece of architecture.
All right, what I got from the pictures that you gave, it's so big.
How big is it?
Well, you can't even get the curvature.
No, we right.
I mean, it's just a massive building.
You have to get in a helicopter to see it in its glory, really. We saw like a very small percentage of it, and it's beautiful.
I'm going to suggest it's the most important building of this century.
Wow.
I mean, I think it is.
Colosseum. Spaceship.
Wait a minute. Are you talking about Soldier's Field? What?
they landed a spaceship in Soldier Field. Yeah,
well, that's what we do around here. No, but I mean, it's certainly they spent a lot of effort on the design of it. Uh-huh. What did you think of it when you saw it?
The nice part is they have a nice visitor center across the street with a beautiful, full, huge table rendition of the whole thing, and they hand out iPads with augmented reality software so that you can see the whole thing from that perspective, from a miniature perspective, and, you know, like open up the top of it and look inside of it with the augmented reality. It is a special, amazing building. I agree with you that architecturally, it is one of the wonders of architecture for the century. Mm. And the idea of how much work is being done in there and the innovations that will be coming down the pike is something that I thought about the whole time. Mm-hmm. Augmented reality being one of those things that we see as the future of technology. This was a great experience.
Oh, how wonderful. Anything else you want to say, Steve?
Well, you know me. I love bad movies.
Steve loves bad movies. Well, we got some reviews of those earlier.
So while I was in San Francisco, I went to all the filming locations for the movie The Room, Tommy Wiseau's masterpiece from 2003.
Well, wow. Everyone must have been thrilled, Steve.
were you with the tour bus at that time, too?
No, the Tommy Wiseau tour bus was not running at that time. I know. I'm a nerd. I get it. But I was there. I went to Tommy's building on Beach Street. I went to Guerrero Street to look for the hospital. It was phenomenal to me to see all of these things. We went to Golden Gate Park. We did see the Golden Gate Bridge, by the way, on the list. After Tommy Wiseau's building on Beach Street, the Golden Gate Bridge was there, too.
There, too.
That was there. It was there as well. We went on a streetcar and went up the giant hills in San Francisco. Of course, I sat in the same seat that Tommy sat in the beginning of The Room. It was fun for me. I dragged the kids along. They took pictures of me smiling as dumb as I could smile. And they're all on my Instagram. Go to my Instagram.com/MrFoder, and you can see all of the pictures of all of my fun and all of my nerdy stuff.
So, Steve, some people go to Vegas to gamble. Uh-huh. Others go because the Consumer Electronics Show is there. Tell us a little bit about what you enjoy about it and what to expect.
The Consumer Electronics Show is opening today in Las Vegas, and it's open all week. All of the innovations, all of the next gadgets are going to be there. Some things are never going to hit the market. They're just ideas that somebody has, but somebody else will look at those ideas and go, I can tweak it just this way and make this happen. I love the idea of all of these gadgets. What do you think, Ron?
I see that show. I see that convention, and it's like, that is way above anything that I could even wrap my brain around at times.
But you understand from an engineering standpoint that they are trying something. They're moving in a direction and trying to solve some problem that we have. And maybe the vibrating fork that helps you to curb your appetite isn't exactly the right technology.
Well, let's go back to the Computer History Museum.
Mm-hmm.
In the Computer History Museum, there is a Xerox machine that Xerox did not know what to do with, but Steve Jobs did.
That's right.
Mm. And Steve Jobs built a spaceship, Steve.
That first mouse that Xerox made, that first graphic user interface, and made a computer mouse to manage that screen, is there at the Computer History Museum.
So my point being is that at the Consumer Electronics Show, you may see something that someone else will say, I can do something with
somebody smarter like Steve Jobs or Bill Gates or the next guy up.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I get excited about this stuff. I love watching this innovation, and I will be reporting back on it all week long. So keep an eye out on our Facebook and Twitter feeds.
Steve, how do we order food now? How could that change?
Well, there's all sorts of innovations that are happening. I said that I got all my food delivered when I was on vacation using Grubhub and Uber Eats. That's a guy who goes mm-hmm. to the restaurant for me, gets my food, and drives it over to me. Well, what the robots are taking over, and they're taking our jobs. Postmates is one of those services that is able to go and deliver things for you, and they're rolling out a fleet of delivery robots in 2019, where instead of a person, it's just going to be a R2-D2 that comes up to your door and delivers your Big Mac.
So it sounds like that there would be a driver who'd pick up the food
uh-huh.
and maybe take it to a neighborhood and then uh-huh. let these robots kind of leave.
Scatter across the neighborhood.
Oh, goodness. I thought I was going to have a robot flick me off because I was cutting them off in the delivery car. Well, that's good to know. They're going to just scatter R2-D2, then.
R2-D2 will just swear at you, but they'll beep it all out. Don't worry.
Definitely. Good.
In fact, just recording this, I'm thinking like a bus stop. You kind of stop. Uh-huh. The things are let off. Somebody's going to pick them up later on. Uh-huh. But the deal is they can travel down, say, the sidewalks and things of that nature.
Uh-huh.
And that means it's not adding to the traffic issue.
Right. Mm.
Oh, interesting.
We live in the future, and
yeah.
robots are doing all sorts of things. The one thing I regret that we missed it. We did not make it to the robot hamburger stand in San Francisco. Mm. It was closed for Christmas week because the robot is Christian. And we were so frustrated. We took a cab to the hamburger shop, and we got to the door, and there's a sign that says that the robot is closed for the week. But there is a robot that is making hamburgers in San Francisco.
So my God is that a gentleman or a lady wasn't there to feed it all uh-huh.
Yeah, there are still humans that work at the restaurant. So,
But they're working for their overlord.
Those humans got the week off, which is good for them. I'm not upset about it, but it was a little frustrating when we got there and we saw that they were closed.
Steve, the space race is on. What's going on?
China has landed a rover on the far side of the moon.
Well, it isn't easy for a country to actually leave Earth and uh-huh. land somewhere, but maybe
this is the first time that
oh.
an Earth vehicle has landed on the far side of the moon and sent back pictures.
Well, isn't it time we got in contact with the Transformers? Aren't they over there?
Transformers. That's what I said. I said Transformers. What did you say? Who was on the dark side of the moon in your fiction?
I said the Inhumans.
The Inhumans oh. are on the dark side of the moon. I also said Deep 13, the new Mystery Science Theater group. Okay.
Yeah, that's too far from me.
Okay. All right, so we're stretching a little too far. This is still amazing.
This is amazing. I love aerospace. I love talking about the idea of space and space travel and seeing pictures from the dark side of the moon. Oh, sorry. The far side of the moon. We can't say the dark side anymore. It's not dark. It's space. Everything's dark.
Steve, it's time to put on the Wizard of Oz and start the Pink Floyd album. Come on.
That's right. Absolutely right. It's exciting. We live in exciting times, full of all of these innovations, full of the future. Mm-hmm. And going to Silicon Valley to see the history of the future was exciting. And Ron, having you on the show today has been even more exciting.
Glad to join you guys.
Thank you so much for coming downstairs and joining the show.
Sure.
I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
Yes, maybe some better movies will come out next week.
Maybe there'll be less near-death experiences, Steve.
Well, let's hope that there will be fewer near-death experiences for 2019. One is enough. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. You can go to our website, TooMuchScrolling.com. You can send us an email, TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can go to our news site, News.TooMuchScrolling.com. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm the Grim Reaper, Chip.
We'll see you in the future.